Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Let me start with a recap of last night's game, and I want to start by saying there was only one reason to watch that game last night. One reason to watch Jets-Ravens. Well, actually, two reasons. Oh, wait a minute, it's Friday. The flight deck's here. What's up, James Kelly? There's something I have to admit to you. The way my studio is set up, and this is an amazing admission on my part. The way my studio is set up, I've got camera, monitor, monitor, camera, monitor, monitor, monitor. My view of his gigantic head is blocked. So I sometimes forget he's here. But I try to acknowledge that off the top on Friday. When the flight deck shows up, it's like a holiday. This guy's head is like a national treasure. He's here. And if your point is, damn, Rome, you can't see his head behind the monitor? How big is that monitor? It's huge. And so is his head. And he nailed last night's game, by the way. I should have brought him on.
That's right.
That's right. Flight deck. So last night's game, there were two reasons to watch that game. Hey, you notice how I stopped on that point. One of the reasons reminded me of the big head, James Kelly. Two reasons to watch that game last night. Ravens and Jets. Number one, you got down. You bet that game. The other reason is not because the Jets had a chance, because they did not. Not because that game would be close. It was not. The only reason you watched that game last night was because of Lamar Jackson. And he delivered again, because that's what he does. After Mark Ingram opened up the scoring with a TD in the first quarter, Lamar went to work. Touchdown to Miles Boykin.
First and goal. Jackson rolls out to the right. Pumps once. Steps up. Slings it. End zone. Caught. Touchdown. Miles Boykin.
Lamar doing work. Touchdown to Mark Andrews.
Jackson throws. End zone. Mark Andrews makes the catch and he's in for the touchdown.
Touchdown to Hollywood Brown.
Lamar Jackson going to the end zone. Hollywood Brown is there. He makes the catch. Touchdown. Hollywood Brown.
Touchdown to Seth Roberts.
Mark Jackson on second down, wants to throw, goes to the end zone, looks for Seth Roberts, and delivers a dime. Touchdown, Seth Roberts.
Touchdown, Mark Ingram.
Jackson takes a snap, spins to the right, throws complete. Ingram at the five. Ingram leaps. Ingram in. Touchdown, Mark Ingram.
Touchdown, Van Smack. I'm at that point, why not? This
touchdown.
Guy is spreading it all around. 15 of 23, 212 yards, 5 touchdown passes, 8 carries, 86 yards. So he breaks Michael Vick's single season rushing record, and that was an afterthought because of how he was slinging it. Like, there's nothing more tired than non-football coaches and players talking about spinning it or throwing dimes. But my guy was spinning it and throwing dimes. And if you think that he's still just a running quarterback, I'm not going to say that last night should have answered that question. Because if you thought he was still a running quarterback at this point in the season, you're a moron. And you're missing an amazing show. He leads the league in touchdown passes by 7. And if your response to that is, well, he's played one more game than anybody else, then you really are a next level imbecile. This guy's got 7 games with 3 touchdown passes. He's got 3 games with 5 touchdown passes, 1 away from Peyton Manning's record. So we were way past the point of saying, not bad for a wide receiver, not bad for a running back, because it's all damn good for a quarterback. Like, so good, he's doing things that have never been done by anybody who's ever played the position. Breaking Vic's rushing record and having a look at one of Peyton's passing records in the same season, is that any good? This is why he is your MVP. Not in the conversation, not leading the field. He is the MVP right now. You can give him the hardware anytime you want. Because as well as everybody else, or some other guys have played, and some dudes have played incredibly well, put up really big numbers, they just have the bad luck of doing it at the same time that Lamar Jackson is doing what he's doing. This guy could sit out the rest of the regular season, and he's still your MVP. So give him the award right now. And as I've said before, the most amazing thing about Lamar Jackson is not what he does, it's what he could do. The fact that he's appointment television. You know, like the phrase FOMO is ultra lame, like I hate it, but he is the epitome of that. FOMO, fear of missing out. Even in a blowout, you can't turn the game off. Not as long as Jackson is still in that game. The final score was 42-21. It wasn't even that close. That game was over at halftime. But like he's done numerous times during the season, you stick around because you might see something that you have never seen before. And you did. It paid off if you stuck around. Like when he kept the offense on the field for 4th-and-1 from their own 29 in the third quarter.
Jackson will throw a deep ball caught by Mark Andrews down the sideline and out of bounds at the 35.
If you turned it off, you missed that. 4th-and-1 from his own 29. And how about that touchdown pass to Seth Roberts? Go ahead and run that back in the event that you missed it.
2nd-and-20 now. The pass to the end zone. Caught for the touchdown. Baltimore, Seth Roberts.
Notice that I've only mentioned the team that they were playing once so far. Because it was almost like that team wasn't even there, which is a good thing. I mean, normally, if you're talking about a Thursday night game involving the New York Jets, I'm going to find something else to do. Maybe read a book, watch a movie, work a crossword puzzle, something I don't think I've ever actually done. I mean, something, anything. Anything other than wasting my time watching the New York Jets. I see those five words, New York Jets, Thursday night. I'm going to pull Le'Veon Bell. I'm going to throw on my orange leather pants, and I'm going to hit the lanes, unless they're playing the Ravens. The Ravens are so good, they made a Jets game watchable. On a night when they won the AFC North, I'm going to say that's their greatest accomplishment. They made a Jets game watchable. They've ripped off 10 in a row. They won the division. They're doing things they've never done before, like getting me to watch a Jets game. Like, we all have our own code, our own value system, our own ethos. Mine includes never, ever watch the Jets play. Except when they play the Ravens. Because the Ravens are not only good, they're not only Super Bowl good, man, they're fun. They're a blast. They're likable. You know, there have been other teams that were good, Super Bowl good, but they were just miserable. No names mentioned, but they allegedly like to make documentaries about advanced scouts. Like, they make life a humorless grind. Nobody has any fun. Nobody cracks a smile. Hell, no one's even allowed to talk. That's not the Ravens. Unlike those other teams, the Ravens are a blast. Even if you're a fan of the opposing team, you have to admit it. They're so likable, you don't have to be miserable trolls to play the game. Man, it's a game. It's like living a dream. It should be fun. And they are fun. You shouldn't just stick around for the second half of a blowout either. You should stick around for the post-game interview. Normally, the post-game interview is fine. And that's about as good as it gets, right? It's fine. If it's fine, you're lucky. With a few exceptions, you might get a Steve Smith. You might get a Steve Smith.
89, bottom line.
You might get a Bart Scott.
Can't wait.
Then it's memorable. It's rare, but you might get that. You might even get Aaron Rodgers, who had some really good post-game interviews. But in general, the best that you can hope for is it's all right. It's all right. It's okay. But again, not with the Ravens. And not last night, because that post-game interview last night was a blast with Lamar and Mark Ingram and a cameo from Matthew Judon.
We've already established he doesn't like talking about himself. You love hyping this guy up. Threw for 5 touchdowns, the 3rd time this season. Go.
Man, he's special, man. I've been telling y'all since I don't know how many weeks ago that he's the MVP frontrunner. But now I'm going to tell y'all he is the MVP. You know what I mean? He's great. He does everything necessary to be a great QB. Puts it all on the line for his teammates, humble, and we blessed, man. We thankful, we happy for him, and we just going to keep going.
Ran for a touchdown, caught a touchdown. Someone suggested I give you the mic and you ask a question. You want to go ahead?
Freaky L, a.k.a. Action Jackson, a.k.a. Era 8 Apparel. Listen, my dog. Hey, Juno, hit him. Hey, crank. All right, L. Man, you broke Mike Vick's rushing record, man. You the AFC North champions for the second year in a row. How I feel, man? Tell me how I feel, L. Freaky.
It feel good, but you know we got a lot of season left to play, and we got two more banners to hang up. And,
so you telling me the story unwritten?
Unwritten right now.
Book unfinished.
Right.
Congratulations, brother, on breaking Mike's Vick record and being the GOAT, the MVP that you are.
Appreciate it,
brother.
Hey, man, Thursday Night Football in America. Back to you in the studio.
Mark Ingram, if you need him, and everybody does. Everybody needs a wingman like Mark Ingram. Man, I don't care what you do. You need somebody like that in your corner, hyping you up, getting you fired up, and you need Matthew Judon in the background dancing. Who doesn't want that crew?
Hey, crank. All right, L.
Crank. Freaky L. I've got more thoughts on that. That was my favorite part of the night. Well, not really. The five TDs that he threw might have been my favorite part of the night, but that was a good way to end it. More thoughts on his crew and how it compares to my crew and why we all want a crew. That's coming up. But quick timeout. USF Bulls head football coach Jeff Scott joins me when we return. If you need crank. Are you worried about finding the perfect gift for the holiday season? I've got it. Peloton. Peloton is the gift that they're guaranteed to love this holiday season. Give your loved ones what they really want. Give them the gift of Peloton. I own one. In fact, I bought my Peloton long before we partnered up on this podcast. And I love mine for so many different reasons. It's convenient. It's right there in the house. I never miss a workout. I love the variety of classes. I love the different instructors. The way you can compete against the community. There's a leaderboard. There's a way to keep score. And now more than ever, there is a reason to get in because of the gift of a worry-free trial. With Peloton's new 30-day home trial, you can try the bike out worry-free for 30 days. If you decide that it's not for you, you can return that bike for a full refund. Peloton will even come pick it up at no cost. I don't think that's going to happen, but they will if you decide that it's not for you. Except with the endless variety of entertaining live and on-demand classes and the motivation you get from world-class instructors, I just don't see that happening. It is the gift that keeps on giving well beyond the holiday season. So this holiday, give the gift to Peloton. And for a limited time only, get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike. Simply go to onepeloton.com, use the promo code Rome at checkout. Onepeloton.com, promo code Rome, R-O-M-E, at checkout. I love my Peloton, and I know you will too. So here we are. Here the bleep we are. I mentioned that they started -4 and they're +1.5. Tells you where all the money's going on that game. But for the first time, and here's why I mention it, for the first time in team history, this is an incredible stat. When you think of the Cowboys and you think of that dynastic run they had with Jimmy Johnson and the triplets, even you think back to the day with Tom Landry and Roger Staubach, the Cowboys, for the first time in team history, have a 4,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard receiver, and a 1,000-yard rusher in the same season. So I don't know what's more amazing. The fact that they never did that with Troy, Emmett, and Michael, or the fact that they never did that then, they're doing it right now, and somehow, some way, they're still under 500. I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment, a hell of accomplishment. If that really is the first time in history that they've done that, they've done something the triplets never did, and yet they're still below 500. So for that, I've got to tip my cap to the clapper. Put some respect on the clapper. That's an incredible stat.
The clapper.
Not that they did that, but that they did that and they're under 500 still. And especially right now, because apparently Jason Garrett is doing what he does best, motivating and leading from the front. Because according to reports on Monday, Jason Garrett went deep into his bag of tricks. And when you've got your back up against the wall, everybody's calling for your head. Everybody's trying to get you fired. Everybody is questioning exactly what the hell it is you do on the sideline. When that's the case, and you're wounded, and you're backed up, you got to come out swinging. You have to. You've got to come up with something unique, something different, something that shows there's a reason I've had this job 10 years. There's a reason why I'm still the right guy for the job. So what did the ginger clapper do? He came up with, wait for it. Yeah, you can just go ahead and wait another minute for this one. Wait, a video compilation. Better yet, Lyle Collins said, quote, "It was like a highlight reel. They were all fantastic plays. Everything went well on them, offense and defense. It just shows the type of team we have, the players we have. It's just putting it all together so that you see what it looks like when we do it the right way." End quote. This is what the clapper did with literally his job hanging in the balance, their entire season in the balance. The red man came up with a highlight reel. Whose idea was that? Who the hell came up with that plan? Robert Griffin III? You know, a film session where all the negative plays are deleted. Yeah, that's a deep cut. Only for the most diehard fans to remember that report from Mike Silver back in the day. That quote, at Baylor, they didn't put RG3's bad plays up on the board in the meeting rooms. Is that incredible? They did not do that. And then he asked the coaches with the Redskins to do the same thing. Hey, you know, the negative plays, the bad plays? Yeah, I don't want to see that. I don't want to do that. Take them out. I see Garrett working. I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to remind his guys they're not as awful as they've been playing. They're not what their record says they are. They're not as terrible as everybody is telling them. He wants them to know they can play better. And in fact, here's some actual video proof to document that they have played better. They are better. Like, here's some video to remind you of how we can play and how we should play against the Rams. According to Todd Archer, quote, "Among the plays shown was last season's goal line tackle of Houston Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson by Jalen Smith, Xavier Woods, and Jeff Heath. Another was Dak Prescott's third down head-over-heels run in the playoff win against the Seattle Seahawks. According to Jason Witten, it was pretty straightforward. Quote, I think he's just trying to convey that there's a way in which we need to play. We haven't played to the level that we expect, and I think it was just a reminder of this is how we play. A lot of that is like, whether you know football or not, look at these guys and how they're playing. It was a good reminder to start the week with, this is who we are," end quote. Yeah, I get all that. And I get that he's going to get killed for all that. And Collins, well, he sounded fired up about that montage. He didn't do Garrett any favors by calling it a highlight reel. Because when you call something a highlight reel, something like that, like the thing that you're bringing to it, the thing to turn around their season, the thing to save your own ass, you're calling it a highlight reel? It sounds corny as hell.
Just corny.
Man, that's corny. Just corny. When you're a head coach and you're best known for doing nothing at all except something corny as hell, like clapping on the sideline nonstop and staring off vacantly and saying and doing nothing, it's going to boomerang on you. And it's going to sound corny as hell. It's going to sound like desperation.
Just corny.
It's going to sound like, well, you don't know what the hell you're doing. And you've got nothing to bring to it. And you don't have any better ideas or better ways to motivate your team than to show them a highlight reel. That's what that sounds like. Just as it sounds like the Rams are going to beat them by 3 touchdowns. You know what it sounds like? Some high school amateur hour corndog move. It sounds like we're a minute away from burying the game tape from the last 3 games. Sounds like we're 3 minutes away from digging a hole in the ground and calling in some religious leaders to say some prayers and having a full-blown funeral for the losing streak. And then throwing the football on top and burying that too for good measure. cornball, corn dog, corny as hell. That's what it sounds like when you go with a highlight reel for NFLers. And speaking of sound, I've got to know, what kind of music did they play underneath that highlight reel? Wonder if Garrett dragged out the old boombox, killed the lights, and played some Too Unlimited. Y'all ready for this? Ezekiel, y'all ready for this, Zeke? Yo, Dak, you ready for this? Yo, Witt, you remember this one? You ready for this, Witt? Hey, Jera, you and Steven ready for this? Or I wonder, did he go with something from Snap? Yo, Amari, you got the power. Amari, you got the power. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit. Did he go with more of a British alternative slash dance feel? Did he break out some EMF?
You're unbelievable.
Witt, Sean Lee, you're unbelievable, both of you. Witt, to be playing the way you are after being retired and to be as old as you are, Witt, you're unbelievable.
You're unbelievable.
Listen, I understand what this guy's trying to do. He's trying to get his guys to play better. He's trying, you know, to get them to play to their actual capabilities because they're not. They're underachieving. A team with that kind of talent's got no business being 6-7. So I get what he's trying to do. It's just the corndog manner in which he's doing it is so laughable. Let me help you out here, coach. I would tell you to coach him up, but you clearly can't. So I'm here to help. You want to help your team. You want to help yourself in the process. Figure out a way to get them to play mistake-free football and not do that thing where they have a great opening drive on their first possession and then decide, yeah, I'm good. I've done my job. And then mail it in the rest of the game. And if you really want to motivate your crew for this weekend, you know what to do. You know what to do. Take Jerry's advice and get Ezekiel and his towel going.
Spanking himself as he emulates riding the horse.
It's unbelievable. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Sure you are. This time, though, do not make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from my pals at Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. And, you know, it goes wherever you go. To the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. Just look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? He was the co-offense coordinator at Clemson since 2015. 5 ACC titles, 2 national titles since being named co-offensive coordinator. USF is coming off a 4-8 season. Their head coach is Jeff Scott. He joins us. Jeff, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hope you are.
I'm doing great, Jeff. I'm curious. So you were named head coach on Monday, introduced on Wednesday. What has the week been like for you and your family?
It's been exactly what you think that it would be like. It's been a full speed ahead, but it's the biggest thing. It's been unbelievable, the energy and the excitement. As soon as I stepped off that plane on Tuesday, you know, I was really just overwhelmed by the people here in Tampa, the people at University of South Florida. You know, they're hungry for a winning program. They're hungry for a vision. And it's just been awesome to experience what I've been able to experience the last few days.
I can hear it. I can feel it. Jeff Scott joining us. So when you've had the success that you've had at Clemson, your name's obviously going to come up for a lot of jobs. Before we get into what made this one feel like the right one, how did you go about handling that process in the past?
Yeah, well, I've leaned on some people that I looked up to. Obviously, Coach Dabo Swinney is a mentor of mine. I've been along his side for the last 12 years, actually replaced him as the wide receivers coach when he got the Battlefield promotion to head coach on October 13, 2008. So for those last 12 years being around him. He's someone that I really look up to. And as there's been opportunities that maybe have been presented over the last few years, you know, he would always tell me just to be patient, wait on the right one. And when he got contacted by South Florida, you know, his words to me was, hey, this is the job you want. This is a place you can win. And great conference, great city, great people. Let's go get this. And when I heard that, it just got me really excited. And really, from that point on, I had my eyes set on Tampa.
We're talking to Jeff Scott. You know, you just, in a way, you answered part of my next question. I was going to say, the story goes that late one night last week, the phone did ring, and it's Dabo. What do you remember about the conversation, and what kind of emotions were you feeling when you put that phone down that time?
Yeah, it was great. You know, I answered the phone, and you know, 11:45 at night, I was trying to figure out which one of my players maybe got in a little bit of trouble. And he said, "What you doing, boy?" And I said, "Well, coach, I'm, you know, at home, just got home, getting ready to go to bed." He's like, "You're not going to believe who just called me." He said, "Michael Kelly, athletic director at South Florida, called me, and they want to talk to you to be their head coach." And then I just paused because, again, you know, it's important to me to kind of understand what Coach Sweeney's feelings were. And right out his mouth, he said, "This is one of those jobs you want." And that was really from that point on. That was all I needed to hear. And he was telling me, you know, about the area, obviously the recruiting base, the potential of this school, relatively new program. It's a program I've kind of had my eye on for a while as I've been down here recruiting, you know, the last 12 years for Clemson. And really, to be honest, from that point on Monday night, I really felt like this was going to happen. And it's just, I've had an ultimate peace about it through the entire process. The overwhelming support by everybody back at Clemson, you know, they feel like they're sending one of their own down here to Tampa to try to kind of spread what we have up there at Clemson. And that's meant just as much as the energy and excitement by the people here in Tampa.
South Florida head football coach Jeff Scott is joining us. You know, you mentioned that when Dabo was promoted from receivers coach to interim coach, you then became the receivers coach. Looking back on that, what was that transition like for you?
Yeah, it was a great experience. First of all, you know, just the excitement of that moment, getting a battlefield promotion, understanding in this profession how hard it is to get a full-time job. So, you know, we were 3-3 at the time. We had six games left. You know, Coach Sweeney said, "Hey, I don't know if I really have a chance to get this job, but if we do a great job and win at least four or five games, I'll have a chance." And I remember going home that night and telling my wife all about it. I was so excited. And across the ticker there on the TV that night, I'll never forget it to this day, it said, "Clemson wide receivers coach Dabo Sweeney named interim head coach today." 0 of the last 29 mid-season interim head coaches went on to be named full-time head coach.
Incredible.
And so I looked at my wife and I said, "Hey, 1 out of 30. Them ain't bad odds right there." So literally, that's where – you know, where it started from, that really a tryout coach to where he's built Clemson now. But I had a lot of belief in Coach Sweeney just being around him. He had an unbelievable spirit, vision, to be able to get those players to buy in a short amount of time to really change our season around to get that job. And then what's happened over the last 11 years, you know, that's a very valuable experience for me, and obviously has helped prepared me for this opportunity here at South Florida.
Jeff Scott's the head football coach at South Florida. In fact, to that point, it's not the same situation, but I'm always interested in that first meeting that a new coach has with a new team. And one of the things that you did with each player was have them introduce themselves and say their high school. Why was that important to you, and what was your overall message to your players?
Yeah, well, you know, number one, you know, I wanted the players to know that for me, it's about a personal relationship. You know, I'm coming from a culture where we as the coaches truly care about that young man more as a person than maybe what he can do on the football field. So in my first introduction, I wanted to know a little bit about him. Obviously, what's your name, but where are you from? And maybe try to find a way to make a connection. It was amazing. Probably over half of them, I've recruited their high school. I knew their high school coach, or I knew somebody off their team that maybe I recruited to Clemson or somewhere else. And so just trying to make that connection and let them know right off the bat that, you know, my relationship with them is something that I'm going to value, and that's going to be a major part of, you know, trying to change the maybe culture and energy to be something that can help us lead to a championship program.
We're talking to Jeff Scott for a few more moments. Jeff, go back to wide receivers or the topic of wide receivers, because the list that you've coached is pretty unreal. DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Mike Williams, Hunter Renfrow, T. Higgins, and more. They're all different players with different games. But as you look at them, do they have traits that are common that make them great?
Yeah, you know, they do. And each of those guys, like you said, are a little bit different body size and skill set. But number one, each of those guys you mentioned truly came to Clemson with a burning desire to be great. They had a vision for what they could be as a player, and they were willing to put in the work and had very little issues, if any, off the field. They definitely were willing to put the work in the weight room and on the field and you know, just were different. You know, they just separated themselves from a lot of the other guys maybe in the room because of their mindset and their work ethic. And, you know, I think that, you know, T. Higgins is a young man there at Clemson now that's a junior, and I think he's going to be that next premier guy that's going to go into that top group and hopefully give us four first-rounders in the last 6 or 7 years.
All right, so finally, what does a Jeff Scott USF team look and feel like?
Yeah, it's going to be a group that of guys that are having fun playing this game, that are passionate, that are full speed, great energy, and they're loving what they're doing. And people want to be a part of that. And, again, that's all I know from where I've been. You know it when you see it. You know it when you don't. But, you know, I think just the energy and the enthusiasm and togetherness that really is maybe different than a lot of the other programs and teams that we'll be playing.
He is the head football coach at USF, 5 ACC titles and a couple of national championships while at Clemson. And USF's got their guy. Jeff, great to have you on the show. Appreciate the energy. Appreciate the conversation. Good luck, and I know we'll do it again.
Great. Look forward to it. Thanks, Jim.
Everybody knows about the risk of driving drunk. You could end up in a crash. People could get hurt or killed. Let's take a moment now and look at some surprising stats. Nearly 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by one-third in the last 3 decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Many people are also unaware that driving while high can be just as dangerous. In 2015 alone, 42% of drivers killed in crashes tested positive for drugs. So it's not so harmless, is it? And then check this. From 2007 to 2015, marijuana use among drivers killed doubled. The truth is, driving while high is deadly. Stop kidding yourself. If you're impaired from alcohol or drugs, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Drive sober or get pulled over. Brian Dutcher is my guest. Brian, good to have you on. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Jim. It's a pleasure.
You too, Brian. Thanks so much. Now, if we were to go back to Sunday, let me start right there because you had a game against San Jose State and they were knocking down one shot after another. Late in the game, they took a 3-point lead with over a minute to go. Some of the shots, Brian, they were making were just crazy. What was going through your mind at that point?
Well, there was one sequence, Jim, where we got it inside, we missed a reverse layup, and then we had a point blank tip in, and we missed that. And I'm thinking to myself, this might be it. Boy, we cannot get the ball to go in. And then, to our credit, we managed to get a stop at the very end, and Malachi Flynn had a magical shot, almost a March Madness type of a shot, to win the game for us from three-point range.
All right, so for those who missed it, Brian Dutcher, my guest, for those who missed it, Brian, that shot by Malachi Flynn, he had been 2 for 12 at that point. He hits that fallaway three over three defenders, less than a second to go. What does it say about him that he's not having the best shooting game ever, and yet he still not only is not afraid to take that shot, but he knocks it in cold-blooded?
Not only did he take it, I didn't draw a play up for him, and he still went and got the ball and made it anyway. So he kind of said, Coach, I should have the ball. And he went and found it and made the shot. But he's a guy that's supremely confident, Jim. He wants that shot. He doesn't worry much about what's happened before then. And he will be the guy probably for most of the year if we end up in that situation that we'll find a way to get that shot. Well,
Brian Dutcher joining us. It was an amazing shot. Now, your home arena has become one of the toughest places to play over the years, but what was the noise like in that building when that shot went down and you finished that game off?
It was incredible. And we've led the state of California in attendance for 10 straight years. So we're used to big crowds, and now that we're on the win streak, we've got the building full again, and it was magical. Our crowd is fantastic, led by the show, our student section. And when that shot went in, the building got deafening.
Brian, the team is now 10-0, as I mentioned, for the first time in 9 years. You're ranked once again. I know there's a lot of basketball left, so you're not about to party right now. But how pleased are you with the start of the season?
It's been very gratifying. We decided, like Texas Tech a year ago, to stay older. So we added two fifth-year transfers to the starting lineup. We only have one freshman on scholarship, so we have a maturity experience about us that has allowed us to get off to a good start this year.
Brian, you mentioned Texas Tech. You know, I went a few months back to Texas Tech, and I sat down with Chris Beard, and I spent a day with him, and we had an interview. And I am, and knowing him a little bit, we kind of go way back, but I am absolutely awed by what he has done there as quickly as he's done it. Is somebody in the profession on the outside looking in, what are your impressions of Beard and what he's accomplished already at Tech?
He's a great coach, and we played him here a number of years ago when he was at Arkansas Little Rock, I believe, and he came in here and beat us in our building when we had a good team, and he's just a great coach. He knows how to control tempo. He knows how to get a team better as the year goes on, and hats off to Chris. I was really happy that they went ahead and got that win over Louisville, and he's got a young team back on track.
All right, so we're only 10 games in, but you've already come from down 9 at BYU, down 16 at Iowa, or against Iowa, I should say, and now this clutch win over San Jose State. So what's it tell you about the grit and the toughness of your team?
We're definitely a tough team, and that's something you don't know. You practice, you think you're going to be a good team, and until you're in those situations, you really don't know, Jim. And so our ability to fight back from deficits, to find a way to stay together and come out on the winning end speaks volumes for the quality of this team. And so when we get down, we're not panicked. We know it's a long game, and the guys seem to stay focused and not point fingers, not want to play hero ball. They stay with what we're trying to do and have found a way to come out on the winning side of them.
Brian Dutcher, my guest. Brian, how much of that, sorry to interrupt, how much of that, though, is about guys that have been in the program for a while and understand the culture and the expectations?
Yeah, with college basketball, Jim, you know, it's always a mix of transfers and then program guys. So guys like Jordan Shackle and Matt Mitchell, Nathan Mensa, guys that have been in our program 2 and 3 years, provide great leadership. And then we add guys like Malachi Flynn from Washington State, K.J. Fagan, who was a first-team All-WCC player from Santa Clara, and Yanni Wetzel from Vanderbilt. So it's a mix this day and age. Rarely do you just have all program guys. You mix guys that are part of your culture that have been here 3, 4 years, with guys that are leaving situations where they feel it's better for them to win and to be successful to come to your program. So it's always a mix, and that's the fine line with coaching is try to put it all together.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Easier said than done, right? I understand what the goal is, but how do you go about putting that all together and having all these different types mesh?
You want to find guys that are leaving for the right reason. You don't want to take someone else's problems. And so we have a guy like Malachi who averaged 16 a game at Washington State, but wanted to win more. We have K.J. Fagan, who averaged 18 a game at Santa Clara, first-team All-WCC, that just felt, as a fifth-year senior, he wanted an opportunity to try to win at a higher level. And so when they come here, Jim, they have to sacrifice part of their games because they're playing with other good players, and these guys have been willing to do that, sacrifice part of who they are in order to win basketball games.
We are talking to Brian Dutcher. Now, Brian, every coach I talk to, literally every coach in every sport, and I always mention this, talks about culture and then trust. And trust is a big part of culture. They come hand in hand. How valuable is that on the court, trust?
It's everything. You know, there's not a guy that plays basketball that can't create his own shot this day and age. But the key is, can you create a shot for someone else? And so offensively, all we really talk about, Jim, is sharing the ball. You know, get two defenders on you, play like they do in the NBA where it's the elite of the elite. Whenever they have two on the ball, they find the open man. And trust that your teammate's going to make that shot if you get it for him. And so that's always the emphasis as we move on. Share the ball, play the right way, and then guard at a high level.
So, Brian, do the guys all understand this inherently, or do you sometimes have to push back against, yeah, but coach, I can't share my way to the next level? How do you respond to that? How do you deal with that?
we just, you know, we try to show them what they're doing in the NBA. Hey, this is how they play. This is how you're going to be expected to play when you get there. So if you're good enough, this is the level you have to you're not going to be that guy if you get up there that they put the ball in your hands and tell you to score right away. You're going to have to coexist with other great players and play the right way. So why not do it now? Why not show them you're capable of that? And that's the message we deliver.
We're talking to San Diego State head basketball coach Brian Dutcher. Brian, you and my guy Eric Musselman used to go up against each other when he was at Nevada until he left for Arkansas. I bring this up because there's this story that the two of you had not spent much time together until a Nike coach's weekend a couple of years back in Santa Barbara. Musk said, quote, "I think coach's sons always have a mutual understanding, a mutual respect," end of quote. I mean, to me, Musk is one of those just ultimate basketball lifers. He's like, he's given everything he has to the sport. What was it like when the two of you guys got together?
It was great. You know, Eric's dad, Bill Musselman, was the head coach at the University of Minnesota. And then my father, Jim Dutcher, took over for him at the University of Minnesota. So not only were we both coaches' sons, but both our fathers led the University of Minnesota basketball program. So we had a connection. And even though I knew of Eric, I didn't get to spend a lot of quality time with him until the Nike trip. And obviously, Eric's mother still lives in San Diego. He gets back to San Diego, and so he's proven what kind of coach he is, having success at Nevada and now having the same success at Arkansas.
Now, as long as we're talking about some of my favorite guys, I've got to ask you about Steve Fisher, who you coached with for a long time. What did you learn from your time with him?
I always say Steve Fisher's greatest quality, in a world of talkers, he was a great listener. He can sit there. He had an ability to let everyone speak their mind, to listen, not try to talk over people, get the best out of everybody, and then come up with a formula for what he felt would help the program in San Diego State. And so having worked with Steve for 10 years at Michigan and then 18, 19 years here at San Diego State was a real blessing.
So what about that, Brian? For instance, after the way you and Steve built that program, you could have had opportunities, I'm sure had opportunities, to go elsewhere. But when you were named head coach, you talked about how important it was to take over something that you helped build instead of taking over a program that somebody else built. Why was that so special?
Coaching's a hard business. We all know that. And so I always approached it like it was a marathon instead of a sprint. I wasn't looking to go take a job as good as I thought I could be, that would be hard to win at, and then all of a sudden be out of the business in 2 or 3 years. And so I helped build San Diego State with Steve. I felt like this was the best program in the Mountain West and that it would be worth waiting to take this one over. And I was very fortunate that San Diego State felt that way, that they wanted to give me this opportunity. And now I want to do the best to keep the program at the level it's been at.
So what about that, Brian? Finally, when you look at where the program was when you and Steve first arrived and where it is right now, you're 10-0. The expectation is an NCAA tournament appearance and more every single year. How much pride then do you have as to where that bar stands now?
Yeah, once we went 34-3 with the Kawhi Leonard team, we set a high bar. And so we've been to the NCAA tournament 7 of the last 10 years, and that's the expectation, and that's our expectation. So if we fall short of that, we're disappointed. So I think it's good to have high aspirations, and as a program, we have them every year.
And then finally, Brian, since you mentioned Kawhi, what was he like on campus? What was he like to coach?
Kawhi was the hardest worker I've ever been around, and I've been around a lot of great players. He was just driven to be great. And the time he spent on his game, I've never seen anything like it. And it's to this day. If he's back in San Diego and he gets in the practice facility, he'll be in there an hour, 2 hours straight. And some guys, when they work out, you can go in and they're going to give you a hug and a handshake. When Kawhi works out, that's the office. You don't interrupt him. He doesn't want to talk until it's over. Once the workout's over, he's as nice a person as you're ever going to meet. But when he's working, he's working.
I got to imagine you use that as an example when you talk to your guys right now.
Oh, absolutely. What better example than Kawhi Leonard, who came here, stayed 2 years, had great success, and now arguably is the best player in the world.
Anthony Grant is my guest. Anthony, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me, man.
Good to have you. All right, so you're coming off a win over St. Mary's at the Jerry Colangelo Classic. That's a game where you came out to a 46-25 lead in the first half. Seems to me if you're facing a program like St. Mary's, you better show up or they're going to make you pay. How pleased were you with the way everybody was ready from the opening tip?
Very, very pleased. I thought our guys, you know, we've spent a lot of time just talking about, you know, just from a scouting standpoint, what we needed to do to take away some of St. Mary's strengths. They're obviously, you know, one of the, to me, the elite offensive teams in the country with their spacing and the talent they have and just the stuff they do. So we knew from a defensive standpoint it'd be a great challenge for us, and our guys did a good job of locking into that and being able to take away some things that they've done all year.
Right, and they're always a very well-coached team. Now, strong starts are nothing new for your club. You've led at halftime of every single game this season. What does that tell you about this squad?
Well, we've got some veterans. You know, we've got some guys that have played in our system, you know, for a couple of years. We've got some guys that are familiar with, you know, college basketball and the transfers that we got that sat out, learned our system last year. And, you know, we've got a group that's really well connected. They know each other. They enjoy being around each other, whether it's on or off the floor, and they play well together.
Dayton head basketball coach Anthony Grant is my guest. They are number 12 in the coaches poll. Now, you're second in the country in scoring, and you lead the nation in assists per game, two-point field goal percentage, and effective field goal percentage. Every coach talks about wanting to share the basketball, but how do you coach that so guys really buy in and they do it better than anybody else is doing it the way your guys are?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what we just talked about. You know, we got a group of guys that really, they care about each other. You know, they enjoy playing with each other. They enjoy being around each other. And by nature, they're an unselfish group. You know, we've got, and the thing I try to tell our guys is just play to your strengths. You know, do what you do well. And we've got other guys out there that maybe what's one guy's strength helps complement another guy's strength. And they just play off of each other. And that becomes contagious, you know. So it's great to see the ball move the way it's moved for us. Obviously, you got to make shots. You got to have good players to get the assists. But the ball movement, the player movement, I think is one thing that we try to emphasize and our guys have really bought into.
We're talking to Anthony Grant, again, the head coach at Dayton. Now, if we were to go back to the Maui Invitational in November, you went out there and you dominated a good Georgia team. You smashed Virginia Tech, and then you went to OT against Kansas in the championship game. Obviously, you want to win that tournament, but overall, how valuable was the experience?
It was a great tournament. You know, we knew coming in that we'd get great competition and we'd learn, you know, where we are at this point in the season. And obviously, going into Maui, we had played three games, you know, and it's early in the year. And obviously, for us at Dayton, we know how important these non-conference games are in terms of building a resume. But at the same time, you try to keep it in perspective and say it's early in the year and let's see what we have. So I think, if nothing else, you know, we found out that we're capable of playing against some of the best teams in the country. And when we're right, you know, we got a chance to compete with anybody. So I think our guys felt good about it. Obviously, disappointed that we didn't, you know, get the ultimate goal of winning the championship. But you got to give Kansas credit. They were a load that game. Their guys did a great job of doing the things they needed to do to win it. But I felt like we got better from the competition.
Dayton head coach Anthony Grant, my guest. Obviously, I've got to ask you about Obi Toppin. He had a huge showing in Maui. He's been a monster all season long. Before we get to his growth from last year to this year, when you look at where he was at the start of his freshman year to where he was at the end of his freshman year, how much did he grow in just that season?
Yeah, well, Jim, I'll go back to, you know, what Obi shared when he was in high school. You know, he was 6'5", maybe 175 pounds, and was basically headed toward junior college. And then, you know, his a family member was able to connect him with Mount Zion prep school. And, you know, while he was at prep school, you know, he grew another inch and a half, 2 inches, and was able to gain some interest from some colleges. So when I took the job back in 2017, he was still available. And so we were fortunate to be able to get him to commit to us. And then, you know, he was an academic redshirt, and during that year, he probably grew another inch. And our strength coach and our trainers, they did a great job. He put on about 20, 25 pounds of good muscle. So, you know, he worked really hard. That's the thing I think that gets lost sometimes is he used that year really to get better. He really worked hard on his game. He worked hard in the weight room, and he learned our system. So at the beginning of his freshman year, he came in, you know, knowing – having more familiarity than your average freshman with what we were trying to do. And then I felt like every game you could see him getting better, just that experience of being out there playing well, making mistakes, learning from film, learning from his coaches. And, you know, he's a guy, if you meet him, you realize he has great enthusiasm for life. He really enjoys playing the game. He's a student of the game, and I think he's got a tremendous upside.
Coach's dream. Dayton head coach Anthony Grant joining us. So one more thought then. He comes back as a sophomore, and you laid out the kind of work that he's put in, how he's improved. I guess there's an argument to be made that without Zion and John Morant out there in the NBA, he is the best dunker in college basketball. Where do you come out on his dunking and his overall game now at this point?
He's really athletic. He really is, you know, for a guy his size, probably one of the fastest guys that you'll see, and then also extremely athletic. But I think Obi's got so much more to his game, and for a guy his size, his ability to handle, pass, shoot, his understanding of spacing, his understanding of what you're trying to do on the basketball court. You know, and I think, you know, at this stage, what are we, nine games into his sophomore year, you know, he still hadn't played 50 college basketball games. So I think he's just at the beginning of where he can be as a player, and he just continues to learn more about the game and continues to get better.
We're talking to Anthony Grant for a few more moments. You know, looking at your background, Anthony, you were with Billy Donovan, and you've been in some other places, big-time programs. But as a Dayton alum, what would it mean to you to lead your school back to the NCAA tournament?
It would mean a lot. You know, obviously, there's a great history here at Dayton. I played for Don Donaher, who's a Hall of Fame coach. And, you know, my freshman year, we went to the Elite Eight, lost to the eventual national champion in Georgetown. And, you know, you look at the coaches that have come after Coach Donaher, there's been a long legacy of getting to the NCAA tournament and winning. And Coach Miller before me was able to get him back to that Elite Eight perch. So Dayton's a place that is accustomed to success, accustomed to winning championships, accustomed to getting to the NCAA tournament and advancing in the tournament. So, you know, as the steward of the program at this point, it'd be an honor, you know, for me to be able to lead them back to the tournament and hopefully advance.
So before you go, right before you came on, I had Brian Dutcher from San Diego State on, and we talked about what it's like when teams come into their house and the home court advantage they have. Like San Diego State, you have an amazing home court, which is great, but at the same time, what's it like to try to schedule non-conference games? How challenging is it to get elite teams to come play in your house?
Yeah, it's been a bear, you know, and obviously, you know, when you have the success that we've had and the tradition, we've got some of the best fans in the country. I think we've been ranked in the top 25 in attendance for like 25-plus years. So Dayton's a place that, you know, rain, sleet, snow, no matter what, our fans show up, and they're excited to watch their Flyers play. So obviously, from a scheduling standpoint, you know, it's challenging. But, you know, fortunately for us, our fans are awesome. They travel. You know, we've last year we were in the Bahamas after we left the tournament. They invited us back. You know, I think you can go every 4 years, so we'll be in that again. And I think Maui, you know, with our fan base, the way our fans showed up, hopefully we'll get an opportunity to play in those type tournaments on a consistent basis. So with that, and then obviously trying to schedule as competitive a schedule as we can in the non-conference is really important to what we're trying to build here. So we'll see. You know, obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, you've got most of the Power 5 leagues going to 20 games, and that shrinks the number of available games for us. But hopefully, with the tradition and success, teams will know that if they play a Dayton team, they're playing, you know, one of the teams that is a NCAA caliber team, one of the best teams in the country, and it would be a good matchup.
Anthony Grant, my guest. One last thought. So it's Friday, and I'm thinking already after the show, Anthony, I've got that, you know, I think I'm not the only guy who thinks like this, but that dreaded Friday workout that you got to get through. Now, you're locked in on the job. You're putting yourself and your team in the best position for success. Part of that is properly fueling yourself. As evidence of that, you said, quote, "I've got to have some type of latte in the afternoon." I got to know, man, what kind of latte do you go for, and does that give you a lift?
I'll go with the vanilla, latte, and I'll go with a chai latte. Either one of those two, depending on how I feel on a particular day. Lately, I've been going with a chai tea latte.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. Back in SoCal after that New York
what
turn.
What I'm saying is, the NFC East is garbage.
An amazing weekend. Coming to the end of 2019, what do you want to hit on? A lot to get done between now and the end of the year. I'm going to bust the format open, and I'm doing it because of this.
Yeah! It's Kittle with a big play and the stiff arm. George Kittle.
Now, I tried to warn y'all about George Kittle. This guy's a monster. I've tried to tell you about this guy, just like I've tried to tell you for a while that the 49ers are for real.
Just move San Francisco into the East. Give them the title.
My Niner Nation, so much love, because as a long-suffering fan.
Tannehill under pressure, and it's intercepted. Maurice Hurst off to the races. Tannehill cuts him down at about the 25.
That big dog was off to the races.
Not only did he not house it,
he got snot-bubbled by the QB. That's not how you want to show up in your second-to-last game in Oakland, ever.
We're talking to Jeffrey Chidiha. You know, Foxborough, obviously, Jeff, is a nearly impossible place to get a win. So how big was that win for Kansas City?
It's like, what's the place that Jason Bourne was created, Treadstone? That's right. What Foxborough feels like. You can't really understand.
JB, Boomer, Phil, Nate, JLC. Got a sports update for you. Here you go. What's up, Rich?
Very disappointed Alvy missed the Boomer drop.
Dan in Buffalo. What's going on, Dan? How are you?
Hey, is this Jim?
It is.
Yes, the Mafia. I mean, we're still here.
Is this Jim? No, it's the other guy who hosts this show. Dennis Dodd joining us. Lane Kiffin being introduced. Dennis is the head coach at Ole Miss.
He was played off the stage when he was introduced with Bachman Turner Overdrive taking care of business.
Oh, barbecue. Oh, barbecue.
Ole Miss, what's up?
We didn't come here to be good, all right? That's not why we're here today. We came here to be great.
Came here to chunk up and not fit into our suits. Kick some ass. I'm so glad this guy's back where he belongs. The SEC.
Touchdown! The Giants have scored again!
Hey, look, I don't know who the hell you think you are, but you can go ahead and stop that right now. This is not who we are. Now trust the bleeping process, and let's get back to playing Giants football.
This is stunning.
He is Terrez Paylor in New Orleans.
You know, the media's sitting all the way at the top, and, like, the media table was shaking. That's how loud it was. A team can perform like that tells me they've got a Super Bowl ceiling.
The ceiling is the roof.
People mindlessly whistling public loudly. We so happy about it anyway, Tweety Bird. No time a grown man needs to be whistling is he's hailing a cab. Cat calling that sweet, sweet moth on top of Hoodie Jr.'s head. Email.
Yeah, I want to respond, but I can't. You've got a bunch of hardware and both your hands in my pie hole right now.
That's what she said.
We 100% have zero.
Again, why is it always the Patriots? I mean, it's kind of hilarious to me that they find themselves in this situation yet again. It's always the Patriots.
I don't have any idea what exactly is going on.
That, to me, is not a good excuse. It's not something I'd accept. I don't accept it.
Yo, Belichick, why don't you and your adult-sized hamster son just fess up already?
The Red Raiders have thoroughly rattled the cage of these birds.
No matter the success that they had last year, that chip is still firmly planted on their shoulders. They are not pet store dogs. They're still street dogs. Never lose your chip. Jay Wright, Kyle Lowry won an NBA title with the Raptors this summer. I'm curious, what kind of emotions did you feel as you saw that happen?
It was really emotional. He was a rough character from North Philly. Remember when he came here, I went to the dean of students. This guy won't drink, he won't do drugs, he won't do anything bad, but he could fight somebody. I said, I'm just telling you ahead, he's a good guy. He'll take responsibility for everybody.
Talking to Josh Lambeau.
I had to look at my holder at Logan Cook and say, did I make it? And he starts celebrating. He's like, yeah, he piped it. I was like, oh my goodness, thank God.
251, off the sickness.
Joe Hayden is my guest.
Number two runs the out route. I'm going to jump it, just have my back. So I just act like I was in cover three, hiked it, slow backpedaled out. As soon as the number two ran the out route, I just broke on it. And then I just went and got it.
He was a scratch. There's so many things I could say about that with two gloves, but I won't.
I don't want to get myself or anybody else into trouble, Alvin, but maybe one more time.
Butthole.
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 How many of the buttholes can you identify? You've heard me. 818 for life, baby.
Twitter.
What are you kooks up there, arguing about? Anything north of Camp Pendleton is L.A. Best regards, San Diego. He is Mark Stein.
Forget all that nonsense, man. Let's talk about the real Hall of Famer, Vance Smack.
Caught for the touchdown.
Freaky L, a.k.a. Action Jackson.
Freaky I. Who doesn't want that crew?
Hey, do not hit him. Hey, crank.
How's that hot chocolate?
But hey, 1 out of 30. Them ain't bad odds right there.
Email.
My ethos is never to watch a Jets game either. Signed, Stevie Wonder.
I know he can see.
Hey, Lionel, you happy with yourself? You shouldn't be.
Orange County, out your mouth. There's a reason why you're a sleepy lagoon, Rancho Penasquitos and Bonsall.
Get the heck out of here.
What the f***? Danny boy was going to be with Jack.
Vanilla latte.
I mean, this dude's eye is so lazy, it rides around on one of those motorized skateboards.
Polygamy. Is there a time and place, and if so, where?
And to all you negative naysayers,
it's like an F-U.
251.
You too, buddy. Great talking to you, Jim.
Brick house, bro.
Ow.
Winner, Cardinal dinner.
Back to you in the studio.
You're welcome.
Good night now.
Albie!